Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we are taking you to Ohio. And since I went to college in Ohio, Kenyon, I may have mentioned it, I'm going to educate you on the state that educated me. Good one for my producer. Some people think Ohio has gotten red enough that it's pretty much fool's gold for Democrats. But incumbent Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown is running for re-election, and it's going to be one of the biggest Senate races in the country in November. So we're going to size up the Republicans vying to run against him, and the primary is on Tuesday. There's a car salesman endorsed by Trump. There's a normie Secretary of State that's trying the MAGA hat on for size, and a wealthy state senator who somehow still has a shot. And the voters have very loose opinions about all of them. My guest today is Henry Gomez, Ohio-based senior political reporter at NBC News, who can help us make sense of what is going on in Ohio. Henry, thanks for being here.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right. So how does this primary compare to the one in 2022? That one just seemed to have more flair in it than this one. This one seems a little sleepier. What's going on?
Yeah, no, I totally would agree with that assessment. 2022, we had like a bounty of riches when it came to just how ugly and nasty and messy that primary was. There were more candidates in that race, which I think contributed to it. You also had some pretty strong personalities like J.D. Vance, like Josh Mandel, a guy named Mike Gibbons, who was a wealthy businessman who nearly got into a fist fight with Josh Mandel on one of the debate stages.
I forgot about Mike Gibbons. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, and settled a lot of voters in that primary at the end of the day. But this year, you're right, it has been a little sleepier, at least up until the last week or so, when we started to see a whole lot more money get poured into the airwaves. And we've seen the attacks escalate, because what's happening is we're seeing the Trump candidate, Bernie Moreno, face a very robust challenge from, I guess, the comparatively moderate Matt Dolan. I mean, Matt Dolan is running as a conservative, but he's more cut from the old guard establishment cloth than Bernie Moreno is. And, you know, the polls that we are seeing show it's really close between those two. And you're seeing that reflected in some of the endorsements that Dolan has picked up from Governor Mike DeWine and former Senator Rob Portman. And the fact that Trump, who hadn't been planning to come to Ohio at all before the primary, according to my sources, planning a last-minute rally for Bernie Moreno 3 days before the primary, which is viewed by just about everybody here in Ohio as the last-minute push to get Moreno across the finish line.
Yeah, you know, I should note that Mike Gibbons, I forgot about this, he's a Kenyan alum.
That's right, he is.
How did I forget about this guy? One of our less auspicious alumni, I guess. So there's two reasons I really wanted to do this podcast right now. One is obviously the primary is coming up, although I think it's made very little national news. Like, people are not tuned into this the way they were, again, in 2022. But it is going to determine who's going to run against Sherrod Brown, and that seat is going to be a huge deal. But the other reason that I wanted to do this is the fact that Dolan is like showing something here. And Dolan is my type of guy, my type of Republican. He overperformed in 2022 a little bit. He came in third, but like just behind Josh Mandel, and I think did better than any of us had anticipated. So we'll get to more of him in the program, but I'm interested to see. It would be an incredible upset if Dolan were to pull this out. So I wanted to take a bigger look at it. But before we get into the state races, just because it's been in the news, we did ask this focus group of Ohio two-time Trump voters for the reaction to Joe Biden's State of the Union. The reactions to Biden were like completely predictable from two-time Trump voters. He sounds like he has, you know, dementia, or he, you know, he doesn't sound like he can get a word out, whatever. But I was struck by how they talked about Katie Britt, the senator from Alabama, who gave the Republican response. Let's listen.
I thought it was embarrassing. I really did. They just keep throwing people in there, and they are saying really dumb things. And, you know, this is going to be funny, but I have been watching The View, because you talk about completely opposite point of view on that show. You will get it. But I have to watch it because I want to know what the other side's thinking. But they showed quite a bit of her this morning. Like I said, I think it was embarrassing for the Republicans. I really do. They could have done anything to improve how she appeared, in my opinion. I really don't even know what she was trying to get across, really.
I was very confused. Like, I get embarrassed watching it. Like, I have to stop watching this train wreck or car accident happening in front of me because there's, like, nothing I can do about it. And it's like, why? Like, why?
So I bring up Katie Britt not just to pile on with the two-time Trump voters, but because I have long been saying that I thought she was a real potential vice presidential candidate. And so before we get into the other things, I do want to ask you about J.D. Vance, because as sort of Nancy Mace and Carrie Lake, like, we've all had the sense that Trump's going to go with a woman. But as we watch many of these women sort of debase themselves to get the VP nod, they are blowing up their own chances at being taken seriously. And it's starting to feel more like J.D. Vance could really be the guy. What's your sense of J.D. Vance's likelihood that he could be the VP pick?
I think he's a long shot just based on the fact that he's not been in the Senate very long. And, you know, there's going to be this pressure on Trump to pick a woman or perhaps a candidate of color. But one thing that struck me in that, I think it was in that particular focus group, Sarah, was when they were asked about J.D. Vance, they had very strong and positive opinions of him. Like, senators in Ohio, and I assume this is true in other states as well, aren't as well known or as well loved as governors. Like, governors are the ones that get the headlines and are more out there on the local news or on the front page of the local paper, as opposed to the senators that are mostly end up becoming creatures of Washington. But Vance, who's, you know what, in his second year in the Senate, to have these, like, very strong and positive opinions in his favor, that really struck me. And to tie it back to the Brit conversation, it strikes me that Ohio voters, or at least many of them, have a good BS detector or can sense authenticity, and they see it in Vance, but maybe didn't see it in Katie Britt's State of the Union response. The thing I'll say about Vance is something that one of the voters in that group brought up, and it's that he became very visible after the train wreck in East Palestine, the chemical disaster there, and really put himself into the spotlight there, but in a way that was trying to, like, you know, start a constructive conversation about it. Yeah, he was throwing some partisan bombs at Biden for not being there earlier, or at Buttigieg for not coming soon enough. But he did really take that on as a leadership issue. And I think it put pressure on the Democrats to respond more to that tragedy. And it's become kind of his signature issue here in Ohio. And we also see headlines of him, you know, teaming up with senators like Elizabeth Warren on legislation. And I do think that people like seeing that. They like seeing some results. They like seeing that maybe he didn't go to Washington and become exactly the ideologue he came across as on the campaign trail. So I think for all those reasons, he would make a strong entry on Trump's shortlist. I just don't know how feasible or likely it would be.
Well, you referenced the fact that these voters said positive things about him. And I want to play some of that sound, because it is, having listened to voters and even the voters, when they talk about people they're going to vote for, they rarely talk about them, you know, that enthusiastically. But they were nice about Vance. Let's listen.
I don't know that I can say every decision he's ever made on anything, but I think for the most part, I have been pretty aligned. And, you know, like I said before, I don't think there's a lot of transparency on either side, but I think there has been at least the ability to kind of figure out why he voted a certain way or what decisions were made.
After the train wreck in Ohio, he actually came to one of the creeks where they were doing the soil sampling and everything. And he was one of the first people from the government to actually go and do that and make a comment, as opposed to it took Biden a really long time. It took other people. So I kind of just said that he had, like, the forefront to get out there in front of something, kind of tackle it. I liked that about him, the initiative.
Yeah, you know, Vance is a weird one for me, because the never Trump J.D. Vance is the one that I liked. And so watching him go through the metamorphosis where he became fiery populist J.D. Vance came across to me as deeply inauthentic and craven. But, you know, voters will give you sort of one road to Damascus moment, because a lot of them did. I mean, I remember when Ohio went for Kasich in 2016 and they thought, you know, that Trump was bad. And obviously now Ohio has undergone some, it's not even ideological shifts exactly, but it has become very Trumpy, to the point where I got to say, populist J.D. Vance, I know what you're saying about him being newish in the Senate. He does seem like he's starting to feel like the heir apparent a little bit to the populist side of what Trump does. And it seems to fit Ohio particularly well as some of these Midwestern states that went for Trump in 16 and really have changed the dynamic in our politics. So do you agree with that, or tell me what you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can all talk about the hillbilly elegy days where J.D. Vance was on a book tour and talking a lot of trash about Donald Trump and how he wasn't going to vote for him. And that's what a lot of people remember about him who were following politics closely at the time. And it was a little bit jarring to see the switch. But I do think that, you know, he comes at his populism from a very intellectual point of view. And sometimes that might fly over voters' heads, but he is fairly consistent on it. And Sherrod Brown, who is the other senator in Ohio, has populist credentials as well. So they both are kind of in tune with that working class aesthetic, although they come at it obviously from different ideologies. But it's something that I think that because Vance has put the work behind it in the Senate and the stuff that he's received coverage for doing since he's been there, whether it's the East Palestine train disaster, whether it's consumer affairs issues that he's sort of taken the lead on, that's stuff that people like and respond to. And to another point, I tell this to everybody in Ohio, no one is pure on Trump. So like J.D. Vance did get wrapped for that pretty heavily in his primary. Bray Marino has come in for his criticism as well because he was a critic of Trump in 2016. But yes, this was a Kasich state in 2016. So nearly everybody supported somebody else for president that year. And it's how you make that pivot, I think, at least it'll determine how far you go with Trump voters. They will sort of give you that mulligan, but you have to be able to explain it in a way that makes sense to them, which in the case of both J.D. Vance and Bernie Marino is really, 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 really kiss up to Trump, say how wrong you were, how right he was, and that you have never been so happy to be proven wrong about something. But they do it, and they've done it in a way that's convincing, I suppose, to voters. And so that's kept them out of trouble. You can't say that for Bernie Marino quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, J.D. Vance, if it's a bit, he's extremely committed to it. And I think he is an intellectual guy. He's like a pretty serious guy. And so I think he found a story to tell himself that allowed him to sort of be this person that he now has internalized and believes. I like get the sense when I hear J.D. Vance that like he's not just playing anymore. There's like enough in here that he thinks he's on the right side. And look, he shows good political instincts on things like this. I mean, it was Buttigieg or Biden, you know, you have those kinds of accidents. Like, yeah, that's what politicians do. They get there, they show up, they make people feel like they care about it. And that's something that he did. And clearly it was in the group. You could just tell that made a big impression on people. All right, let's get into the current Senate race, starting with the guy that Vance has endorsed. Bernie Moreno is a Cleveland area car salesman who's running for the second time. He dropped out of the race in 2022 to clear the way for J.D. Vance. The voters we talked to didn't have that many impressions of him as a candidate, but they knew Moreno's one big value proposition for his candidacy. Let's listen.
That is the beat of every one of his ads. Trump endorsed. That so far, that is his only qualification, and the fact that he is not a lifelong politician.
I actually was looking into it before we did this. I know one of them, Trump wants Bernie, and then the Marino guy. That was the guy that kind of like just kind of jumped out to me. The first guy, Frank, I was like, yeah, but I will have to go in and do more research.
I think that, you know, I'm going to go with whoever Trump endorses because, you know, I'm looking at the team working well together. So that'll probably win it for me.
I live in Cleveland, and I had never heard his name before you asked me about it on the screening call like 2 hours ago. I have no idea who he is. I don't know anything about him.
Yeah, I see him as similar to Donald Trump in the way that he's an outsider and not part of the political machine, which makes me think that maybe he's not corrupted by whatever corrupts the politics. Well, it's money. You know, but he's coming into it already with his own money.
And I don't think Trump even knew what he was doing anyway. He just throws it out there. I'm sure he didn't go to Bernie's website and check him out. He probably just knew he was a millionaire. Oh, you're a millionaire. You got my vote. I'll endorse you. That's how I feel about it.
That last person liked Donald Trump just fine, though, despite that she was sort of joking about how he made his decision. So it was different in both the groups, right? One group was just a little more tapped in, like they were paying more attention. And in that group, Moreno was cleaning up. In the other group, where people seemed to be paying a lot less attention, like you heard that woman say she hadn't heard of him. And so how much does a Trump endorsement, because you broke the news, right, that Trump was going to be headlining the rally on Saturday night. So how important is it that Trump is endorsing Moreno?
Well, if he hadn't, I mean, Moreno would probably not have a prayer in this race because he was polling in single digits at the beginning. And this was after having briefly been a candidate in the 2022 primary. And then Trump had started saying some nice things about him when he got into the race this time. Moreno's campaign immediately turned that smartly into an ad that led with Trump's words at a rally somewhere last year saying, you know, we love Ohio and we love Bernie Moreno. That ad got played so much last fall before Trump actually did endorse Moreno that my six-year-old daughter was quoting it around the house.
Oh, that's no.
How often it was on TV. And so they were using that to drive up Bernie's poll numbers to get him into a spot where they could show Trump and say, hey, look, he's rising. Now's the time to get on board. So in December, Trump endorses Moreno, and we've seen the numbers go up. The problem is it hasn't sealed the deal for him. There's still a lot of undecided voters here. And Matt Dolan has spent so much money on television, you know, hammering his own message that it created this close race. And then you have Frank LaRose, we haven't really talked about yet, but is a two-term Secretary of State. And in one of those focus groups, I believe it was the one where the voters were slightly less plugged in to the race. I mean, Frank LaRose cleaned up with them because I'm guessing he has the name recognition. You know, they've seen him on the ballot before, and what they have read about him, they like. But if they haven't been following this race closely, they haven't seen, and you mentioned this at the outset, Sarah, that LaRose has really gone on this full MAGA conversion away from the more centrist, no labels, normie, moderate Republican that he had been in the past. So I do think the Trump endorsement has obviously helped Bernie Moreno. It just hasn't sealed the deal for him. And the fact that we're a few days out from this primary and he has to call Trump in for a last minute rally, the fact that, you know, we're seeing polls showing Moreno and Dolan neck and neck. And we heard this from the voters in those focus groups. What they know about Bernie is that Trump endorsed him. And that isn't necessarily going to mean that they vote for Bernie Moreno. And he hasn't maybe defined himself beyond just being the guy that Trump endorsed. Whereas they've seen enough about Matt Dolan and his TV ads, and they've seen or heard enough about Frank LaRose over the years, where they feel they know those two candidates a little bit better. So the Trump thing isn't enough, I guess, is what we're seeing.
Yeah. I mean, what I remember about Trump's endorsement of J.D. Vance was how much that helped J.D. Vance. Like, J.D. Vance was really sort of sucking wind behind Josh Mandel, and Trump got in there, endorsed Vance, and that, like, made the difference. It shot him up like a rocket. And Trump loves taking somebody who's been not so nice to him and turning them into a convert and showing that he can come to their rescue. But, you know, I wonder if for Frank LaRose, who you were just talking about, which I think you just made a great point about him. Look, I'm very mad at no labels right now for thinking about third party candidates, but generally I'm sort of a moderate squish in that way and love me some secretaries of state, especially Republican secretaries of state who certified the 2020 election and did the right thing. Frank LaRose was that guy. But yeah, he's gone through this MAGA conversion and we're going to get into the sound about him. But do you think he's splitting the MAGA vote with Moreno and like he's getting the low info MAGA people and Moreno's getting the high info MAGA people and Dolan's over there with his Nikki Haley consolidation?
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. LaRose has been able to cut into the Trump supporting base that has limited what Bernie's been able to do in the polls. I think that LaRose also does really well in the rural areas where the information might not be flowing quite as much. And what the Moreno campaign is trying to do, I think, in this last week or two here is through their own advertising and through LaRose's campaign sort of going in the opposite direction. They are doing what they can to try to pick up those voters. They've been advertising more in like smaller markets, including like places like Charleston, West Virginia, which reaches in to southeastern Ohio, or Fort Wayne, Indiana, which reaches in to western Ohio, to try to like pick up some of those, you know, lower information voters who may have been with LaRose because of name ID, but who would be beneficial to Bernie to pull ahead of Dolan. So yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. And the problem is Dolan has spent so much money and he cleaned up in Cleveland and Columbus last time, which, you know, they're Democratic areas, but they're also two of the biggest voting populations, even for Republicans in a Republican primary. So if Dolan holds his own there and then starts doing well in the suburbs, that just makes more vote that Marino has to peel away from LaRose and some of these rural areas.
All right, well, let's talk about LaRose, or let's listen to what the voters had to say. He makes me so sad. I mean, in 2020, he said that saying that the election was stolen was irresponsible. Then when he was running for re-election in 2022, he said, President Trump is right to say voter fraud is a serious problem. So let's listen to how voters thought about him.
LaRose has actually, I think, been very effective as Secretary of State. I think he has done a very good job at strengthening it. I've worked the last couple of elections in the polls, and I'm somewhat amazed about the security that's been put into it in Ohio, where I think it is the double and triple checks on things, you know, protecting it in terms of the voter IDs and things like this.
He does have a really good website. I've been on it before, and I think it's kind of helped with some of the questions, things that I've had. So if you're maybe on the fence, that might be something you want to look at because it might help you one way or another.
From what I know about him is that he was a Cub Scout, and then he was actually an Army Green Beret, I think. And I mean, he's not my first choice, but I don't really like the other two choices too much. So he's my middle ground. It says that he does work hard and that he, you know, along the line has had some integrity, whether or not, you know, I think everybody's a puppet for somebody else. And I hate to say it like that, but he's one that I could see myself voting for and not beat myself up too much about it.
She said Cub Scouts, but I think she meant Eagle Scout. Is the Scouts very important in Ohio? People seem to really gravitate to that particular factoid with a candidate.
That surprised me too when I heard that comment. And it's something that I know that LaRose's campaign has pushed out there in its messaging, the fact that he's an Eagle Scout and a Green Beret. So maybe it's just an example of the one thing that is getting through to voters about Frank LaRose is that, which I'm sure his campaign folks would take that any day of the week, because those are not bad things to be identified with. The other thing somebody said, I'm not sure if it was just in the clip, but like one woman mentioned how he was the only candidate on the race with young children, and that that was something that distinguished him in a good way, which was interesting. I never thought about that. I mean, LaRose hasn't run a very super open, like, parents' rights campaign like we've seen in other states, but maybe there was like a lane for him there that he could have ridden a little harder and maybe appealed to some people given that he has a young family. So yeah, I mean, the fact that those things stand out to voters, that's good for LaRose. Let me put it this way. The LaRose super PAC in the last few weeks has been running a lot of negative ads on the other candidates. LaRose has not had any money in his own campaign to run ads at all. So there's been no positive on TV about Frank LaRose. It's all been negative about the other candidates. And when we're seeing his base of support erode in these polls, that just helps like Matt Dolan or Bernie Marino, really. And if Frank LaRose's super PAC is bashing Bernie Marino, then that helps Matt Dolan. And it doesn't help Frank LaRose.
Can I ask about sort of what I see as the cynical shift on the, you know, the election being stolen?
Yeah.
What do you make of the transformation? Was it all in preparation for this run here? Or like, why? Did you see that evolve in him?
With LaRose particular?
Yeah.
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 So I've covered Frank LaRose for a long time. I mean, I was out in New Hampshire covering Kasich's campaign, where Frank LaRose was John Kasich's advance man in New Hampshire, setting up the events for him. You know, he was Kasich till I die, basically, and even made comments, you know, in the fall of 2016 about how he couldn't in good conscience support Trump. I think this was around the time of Exit Hollywood. So more broadly, the transformation has been very jarring to watch, because LaRose had always identified as Mr. No Labels. And as far as the election stuff goes, yeah, it did take more of a turn after 2020. You know, fortunately for him, the result in Ohio was so decisive, Trump won by 8 points, that there was no need for a Republican looking to impress Trump to go inventing fraud where it didn't exist. And so LaRose didn't have to do that. He could just say, we run elections great here in Ohio, and I'm the reason why. And that was, you know, also a good and accurate talking point, I suppose. But it was 2022 where we really saw the shift, and it actually has to do with J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance was looking for endorsements for a Senate campaign, and there were other statewide candidates looking for Donald Trump support. So on the day that Frank LaRose endorsed J.D. Vance for Senate, which was the day that Donald Trump was coming to Ohio to rally for J.D. Vance, Donald Trump endorsed Frank LaRose's reelection campaign for Secretary of State. And that's when we started hearing LaRose talk more about election fraud and creating an election integrity unit in the Secretary of State's office. He still, to be fair, emphasizes that there isn't, you know, widespread fraud, at least in Ohio. And if you push him really hard and don't let go, he will acknowledge that he does not believe the 2020 election at large was stolen from Trump. But he started to weave in more of these talking points that we hear other candidates who want to have it both ways, where he talks about Zuckerbucks and, you know, the influence of the media being the elements that rigged or shaped the election, which is a lot different than saying, you know, a bunch of votes were altered or stolen or miscast, and that somehow altered the course of the election, which we know isn't true.
Yeah. So there's one more key player in this race, and we've talked about him a little bit. Back in 2022, you may remember that State Senator Matt Dolan finished in a strong third place despite affirming that Joe Biden won in 2020. There was one Matt Dolan voter between the two focus groups we did, but based on what we heard from all the other participants, he wasn't winning any converts. So let's listen to how they talked about Dolan, starting with one guy talking about why Dolan didn't get Trump's endorsement.
Something about when he endorsed changing the name of the Cleveland Indians to the Cleveland Guardians. He's not going to endorse anybody who supports making that decision.
I mean, he seems like a nice guy, just what little I've looked at, but he seems like he would be wishy-washy. I don't know. That's just my first impression. Like, I haven't done a lot of research.
I think it's Matt Dolan owns part of the one that just got the name changed, the Guardians.
He seems to be the only non-Trump apologist in the race, whereas Frank LaRose, I like him. I've met him before. He's an Eagle Scout that, I mean, like, good guy, but it seems like he's just bent over backwards for Trump the past couple of years, so I want no part of that. So Matt Dolan seems to be an independent thinker. He's a businessman as well, and he's a state senator and pretty good one from what I understand, so that's why I was planning to vote for him.
So for context, Dolan is the son of the Cleveland Guardians, formerly Cleveland Indians owner Larry Dolan. Now, that sound is very interesting because despite the lukewarm reception that Dolan got from the focus group, a new Emerson College poll has him leading. He's polling 26%, Moreno's at 23%, and LaRose is at 16% with 32% undecided. And if there was anything to really take away from the focus groups, it was that, like, there's some real undecided voters out there. They are still just starting to get their heads around this race. So when Emerson did that same poll back in January, Moreno was at 22%, LaRose was at 21%, and Dolan was at 15%. So something's going on. And I think we heard two things that might explain Dolan's polling bump. So he's consolidating the Nikki Haley type voters, who, by the way, tend to be very reliable primary voters. And the Cleveland Guardians controversy notwithstanding, he's been on the air. You said this, right? He has been on the air the most, the absolute most so far. And that matters a great deal when people, you know, this need to do more research into all the candidates means that there's just a lot of undecided voters out there. So you've talked about how he overperformed in 2022 because he spent a lot of his own money and no opponents took him seriously. But as you've recently tweeted about, Club for Growth is spending against him. So what's their line of attack? Is it the Guardians name thing? Like, is that something that you expect will hurt him with the locals? It came up several times. People seem to know about it. And what do you think explains the Emerson College poll that is Dolan leading?
Take the second one first. I think the lead, what reflects that is how much money he's spending again on the airwaves. He's had a lot of ads. A lot of them are policy oriented. And he talks a lot in interviews and debates about how he's for Trump policies, which is his way of getting around. He's not a huge Trump guy otherwise. But like his ads are very policy-driven. He talks a lot about the border and the fentanyl crisis. I think those are issues that resonate with Ohioans that they can look at. And, you know, he might come off as a generic Republican, but he's got a name that they might remember. And maybe it's because they associate it with the baseball team. I don't know. But he's putting a lot of money behind himself. And it's not all negative ads about somebody else. There's a lot of positive building up his own case. So I think that's what's getting through. And when you were asking about, oh, the Club for Growth, it was weird. One of their first ads on him was hitting him on a gas tax that he supported in the legislature, which almost every other Republican supported at the time as well. And it seemed to maybe be more of like a placeholder ad. The club was like, you know, sending the warning shot that they were about to start going hard on Dolan. And since then, they've come at him with much more aggressive, like, this is the anti-Trump guy in the race, which is, you know, kind of hilarious because Club for Growth was just last year plotting an anti-Trump messaging campaign of its own. And now it's kind of in league with Trump and the Ohio Senate race. They back Bernie Moreno and their ads are targeting Dolan. So I think that what we're going to hear a lot of in the last few days on the airwaves, you know, Matt Dolan is not for Trump. He's anti-Trump. We're going to probably hear more of the Cleveland Guardians name change stuff, which dogged him a little bit at the end of the last race as well. To the extent that like Moreno and Trump and their allies can make Matt Dolan look like this, you know, woke, rhino, anti-Trump guy, that'll be to their benefit. Because as we saw in this focus groups, they do remember the Cleveland Guardians thing, which is surprising to me because Matt Dolan is not an out front like leader of the organization, but they do associate that with him and not in a positive way. So like, and those are things that they can understand, right? They can't really like ask them to understand the gas tax and all the nuances of it. That's one thing, but say, you know, he caved to the woke mob and changed the name of your beloved Cleveland Indians. And that's something that people can understand.
There was plenty of sound of people expressing their frustration with that name change. Yeah. Like it went deep with them in terms of their own being annoyed about it. So Dolan has also been endorsed by Senator Rob Portman, retiring, and Governor Mike DeWine. The problem is that those two guys are both relics of the pre-Trump Republican Party that voters I listen to all the time don't seem that enamored with anymore. So while there are some sort of DeWine-Portman types out there, we didn't find them in any of these groups that we did of the two-time Trump voters. So I wanted to play some of the sound about how they talked about Governor DeWine.
I used to love him. Not anymore. He crossed over. I don't know what happened to him. Transgender ideology, I guess, is what I want to say. I don't have any idea what in the world coerced him or convinced him to say that all this was okay. Yeah. I don't know where it came from. I think it came out of COVID. These kids get on there and they make stuff up and then everybody says, yeah, that's a great idea. You're right. I do think I'm a boy. Oh, well, let's just go ahead and have surgery or take some puberty blockers. And I mean, it's no matter what you think, it's insanity.
I just had the feeling that like many other politicians, he was afraid of being labeled a transphobic. And unfortunately, fear of being labeled like that sways a lot of politicians into doing things that maybe they really wouldn't do otherwise.
I think he used to be much more conservative, and I think he has caved, whether he's doing it only outwardly, you know, and for show, and it really is against his personal convictions, or whether he's changed his convictions, I can't say one way or another, but he is not nearly as conservative as he used to be.
Not a lot of love for Mike DeWine for our group. Now, this guy is a second-term governor. You tell me, what's going on here?
And a couple of them mentioned it. It goes back to COVID and the early days of the pandemic. You know, Mike DeWine was one of the first governors in the country of either party, and one of the few Republicans who led with science, at least at the beginning. He was very early to close things down. He had daily, like, you know, everybody talks about Cuomo's broadcasts in New York. DeWine did them in Ohio, and they were appointment viewing for everybody. Like, it became very big with suburban moms. They called it Wine with DeWine. They would have their glass of wine while they watched him and his health director do the updates. But this slowly began to infuriate the right because he was early on locking things down. He supported a mask mandate for a while. He eventually rolled all of these things back earlier than many people thought he should have if he was following the science, but it didn't matter. It really, really hurt him with the far right base of the party. The flip of that is when he was up for re-election in 2022, he won his primary. He had two challengers from the right with right around 50% of the vote. He was re-elected in the general election by a landslide. And so the calculus here, if you're Matt Dolan, he wouldn't have come out and endorsed Matt Dolan publicly if he thought it would hurt him, or if the Dolan campaign said, hey, look, thanks, but no thanks. You could do us more harm. This is obviously being calculated in a way that they feel could help Matt Dolan. And I think where it could help Matt Dolan is those suburban moms that I just told you about. There are a lot of independent-leaning voters in Ohio who still like Mike DeWine. And there are a lot of Republicans who still like Mike DeWine and do wish that the party would revert more to that form of Republicanism. So if Matt Dolan's doing well in the big cities, like I mentioned, and Frank LaRose is doing pretty well in rural, that makes the suburbs a much bigger battleground between Moreno and Dolan. And that's where Mike DeWine can be a difference, I think.
I know that there was a big ballot initiative on abortion in Ohio recently, but what's the trans stuff? What was that about?
Something came up a few months ago where DeWine was, I don't know all the intricacies of it, but basically DeWine was supportive of something that didn't go as far as the right wanted him to. He was a little more sympathetic to the rights of parents when it came to having these conversations with their children about their healthcare decisions. And he vetoed a bill from the legislature because he thought it went too far. The legislature, which is, you know, heavily Republican, overrid his veto. But then, you know, DeWine also did some things by executive order that the Democrats and people that are more progressive on this issue didn't like. But the headline was he didn't do what the far right wanted to on this issue. And so he was seen as being, you know, overly sympathetic to transgender people. DeWine was trying to be consistent, right? He's like, you know, if we're for parents' rights, then we should also be for allowing parents to make this decision with their children who are contemplating this life-changing decision. And we should not be saying, no, under no circumstances, under the law, are you allowed to do this? So that's basically what it was. It was upsetting to the people on the right who have very strong feelings about this issue. But anybody that knows Mike DeWine wasn't really surprised by it.
So leaving DeWine aside for a second, I remember the woman who ran in the 2022 primary.
Jane Timken.
Thank you. So Timken also, she like led her campaign. I remember her first ad was about men playing women's sports. Is there a scourge of men playing women's sports in Ohio? Like, is it a huge problem in Ohio? Like, tell me what's going on.
It's not. It's not a huge problem in Michigan, where we saw Tudor Dixon kind of run with the same type of rhetoric in her governor's race in 2022. But it's, I think what happened was people saw the success Glenn Youngkin had. It wasn't about necessarily this issue in particular, but was more, you know, parents' rights has become this umbrella. And it's something that does appeal very much to, you know, right-leaning voters in Ohio. And they feel that they should have a say in everything, even if it's something that you sort of, I don't want to be like Terry McAuliffe and say you like gave up that right or relinquished that right. It's just something that I think got poll tested. I remember talking to a consultant in Ohio about this in 2022 and asked, why are we seeing Jane Timken make such a big issue of this? And he's like, oh, it's the rare like 80-20 or 90-10 issue in politics right now. Because even though like the country has come such a far way on, you know, gay rights and other LGBTQ rights, this is still like something where like people who aren't as informed or haven't learned enough or thought enough about this issue, there's still a lot of people that have problems with the sports issue, which to your point is not something that's widespread or prevalent, but it's something that you could get people riled up about if you talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a super complicated issue when sure. you like really dig into sure. it, but it's also like a not so prevalent issue that I just find it always a little shocking that people are like, no, this is why I'm voting for this person. And I'm like, does this affect 0.2% of the like, I won't get on my whole thing about that. Were you surprised on abortion that did overwhelmingly pass in Ohio? These groups were, they said that it was confusing, but they were essentially took what I guess I would say the pro-life position. What did you make of the abortion views?
You know, I thought that it was pretty tribal. Like there were a couple of pro-choice voters in those panels that I saw, which was a little surprising, but their feelings on the amendment that passed last year were pretty much went along, like whether they were pro-life or pro-choice. And it is nuanced, but it's also not. Like the campaign last year was to enshrine abortion rights in the state constitution. There were some questions as to like how far into a pregnancy would that be allowed, but those were questions that were asked and answered throughout the campaign. And I'm not surprised with how the vote ended up turning out in Ohio. I mean, it was, you know, 57%, I think, in favor of, you know, enshrining these rights into the state constitution, which is pretty much in line with where public opinion is in the state. So again, I think it falls along whether you're, you know, anti-abortion or pro-abortion rights, how you felt about that.
Well, with all that being said, here's then the $64,000 question. Can Sherrod Brown, let's say it's Bernie Moreno, let's say it's Matt Dolan. Can Sherrod Brown beat either of them, both of them? What do you think?
I think Sherrod Brown could beat any of them. I think it's the hardest reelection campaign he'll ever face. I think he did Democrats a solid by running again. He's not, you know, getting any younger. He's done this now for three terms. He can go and enjoy his grandkids with his wife. But I think part of the reason he ran again is that he knew that no other Democrat in Ohio could win the seat. And I think he's absolutely correct about that. We saw what a fairly strong candidate like Tim Ryan was able to do in 2022, and that's lose to J.D. Vance by the same margin that Joe Biden lost to Donald Trump in Ohio. So Sherrod can win, but it's going to be really hard. because there's going to be so much money and because it is a Republican state. Now, I mean, abortion is a single issue and you'll see the Democrats and Sherrod Brown make as much of that as they can. And I think that they're onto something. All three of the Republican candidates were opposed to that constitutional amendment, which means the Democrats will also argue that they're opposed to IVF because there was a provision about that in the constitutional amendment. So those are going to be positions that could come back and haunt them in a general election. And you'll definitely hear a lot about that. But I mean, it's a state that's trending away from Democrats. And Sherrod Brown had a really tough race in 2012 against Josh Mandel. He won. Obama was on the ballot that year. Obama also won Ohio. In 2018, he kind of lucked up. Mandel was going to run again, but ended up dropping out at the last minute. And Jim Renacci, the Republican candidate, Republicans even agree on this point, was a pretty lousy candidate for Republicans that year. So Sherrod Brown won again. This year, Matt Dolan is from Cleveland as well, from the Cleveland area. So he's going to do well in some of those Democratic candidates that Sherrod Brown needs to have high margins in. Bernie Moreno, more of a blank slate. They're already trotting out oppo on him about lawsuits that he faced as a car salesman and some other things. It's going to be really tough for Sherrod Brown. He can win, but I think all three of those Republicans can beat him as well.
Yeah, I mean, my read on it, just cursory, would be that Dolan, sort of like Nikki Haley, if they can get through a primary, they represent just a much smaller slice of the Republican Party than they used to, these kind of normie Republican types. But if they can get through a primary, because Moreno and LaRose are splitting the MAGA vote, he's tough to beat in a general election because the suburbs come home. And people don't realize this about Ohio. It has like a lot of suburbs. There are lots of urban and suburban areas there where I think Dolan could do really well. And I think he'd win by DeWine level margins potentially. Or do you disagree with that?
The only wild card about Dolan is if he's the nominee, you have this situation where Trump and Dolan running on the same ticket who aren't temperamentally similar, who there's some bad blood between now. Like, you know, Republicans want to win, it'll be bygones, and you know, Dolan and Trump will tick it up in at least a way that doesn't cause much disruption. But you can't ever count on there not being disruption when Donald Trump is involved. And is he going to try to undermine Dolan's candidacy in any way, or try to like pull Dolan further to the right? Is Dolan going to have to make nice with Trump and do some things that undermine his appeal to those middle of the road, you know, suburban voters? I don't know the answer to that. And it's not something we'll know until we see it start playing out if Dolan is the nominee. But in the abstract, yes, Matt Dolan would appeal to those suburban voters. He can do well in places like Cuyahoga County and the suburbs around there. He can do well in Franklin County and the suburbs around there. And by well, that's relatively speaking. Like, he can hold Sherrod Brown's margins down in those counties, which is huge. You know, if Sherrod Brown can't get like 72-75% of the vote in Cuyahoga County, he's not going to be reelected.
Hmm. All right. Well, we are going to come back and do this all again in Ohio once we have a nominee, and we'll see if Sherrod Brown can do the impossible, which is help a Democrat win in now a much redder Ohio. Henry, I didn't ask you at the jump, where did you go to college? Did you go to college in Ohio?
I did. I went to Youngstown State University.
Youngstown State. Yeah. All right.
Grew up in Youngstown. Still have family there. So
Are you buddies with Tim Ryan? He's from Youngstown.
We're not buddies, but we've known each other a long time. One of my first scoops in this business was his announcement that he was running for Jim Traficant's seat in Congress. I was working at the Warren Tribune Chronicle. That was his hometown paper. More in just north of Youngstown. But yes, I love the Mahoning Valley. And I see a lot of reporters parachute in to Youngstown during election season. I'm lucky that I only have to get in my car and drive home to see mom and dad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I crashed a car in Youngstown once. That's what I know about Youngstown.
Who hasn't?
it's a long drive between Pennsylvania and Ohio that I used to make all the time. And Tim Ryan, incidentally, also a guest on this podcast, which means he has one of these focus group mugs, which we will send you to, Henry. Henry Gomez, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And we will see you all next week.